That's right. I'm Ann Eller, right back with you here this morning. I tell you what, I have a super special guest with us here this morning. Suzanne McComas, a former law enforcement officer, a U.S. Air Force veteran, and thank you very much for your service. She's worked nationwide for America's Most Wanted. She's an on-air commentator for several TV and radio stations. She's written 4 books. She runs a nonprofit. But here's what I think is so amazing about Suzanne McComas. I have been reading over the list of people that have said thank you to her, and I just want to read this one, Suzanne, before we get started. I think it kind of must sum up the essence here. It says, "Wow, you thought of things I never even dreamed of, and they're right on the mark. Our client actually has a chance now because of you. I'm so glad we got in touch with you. You're the best investigator I've ever worked with, hands down." And that was a senior counsel for the Public Defender's Office in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show this morning.
Thank you.
I tell you what, you must really love what you do.
I do. I can't imagine doing anything else. if you don't have a passion for what you're doing for a living, you're in the wrong job.
Well, there's a lot of people who are just trying to survive, so it's wonderful when you can put the two together, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Well, Suzanne, I can't imagine what you do and how you do it, but when we see it on TV, we're always so impressed that it only takes an hour to solve a case.
It only takes an hour, and everybody working the case looks like Ken and Barbie.
Yeah.
The other problem. We're all normal. We have normal hair, and, some of us are overweight, but it's okay.
Right. So how is it actually, and how long can you work on a case to actually solve a case?
The show on TV that's closest to reality is 48 hours, and that statistic holds true. If you don't solve a case in the first 48 hours, statistically the odds go way down on it ever getting a successful prosecution. There are an awful lot of cases out there where they know who did it, they know how they did it, they know when they did it, but they don't have enough evidence to go forward and actually get a conviction in court. And that's what's frustrating for law enforcement and the families, is that they just don't have enough because you only get one shot at it. So they hold off hoping that they'll get that one piece they need to go forward and get a successful conviction, and it's very hard to do.
One of the things that I would also think that would be very hard would be the very fact of when you look at old cases, they didn't have the technology that we have today.
No, and they were very handicapped compared to what we have nowadays. And, of course, the samples that they collected back in the 80s, are starting to disintegrate and aren't stable that you can use them with the technology today. Sometimes you get lucky. The nice thing about doing cold cases like that is the people involved, their lives have evolved. They've changed. They're not in the same relationships. They're not the same person they were 10, 15 years ago. So you might have a better chance, at least I do, of talking to them and getting information from them that you wouldn't have gotten back then.
So how do you go about gathering information when you don't know what you're working with? Or do you always know what the direction is you want to go?
I think you do. First of all, the way a cold case review works when you're coming in from the outside, you get permission from law enforcement and from the prosecutor to review the case. That's the first thing, because if I can't see the case files, the information the family has is usually inaccurate at most. It sometimes is totally off the mark. So I have to see the actual case file, and I go in and review that for a couple of days and give them my input on what I think they missed or what I think they could follow up on. And then they take it from there. I don't get any glory for those. There's no ego involved because they're the ones that eventually go forward and get the prosecution. I can never say I solved the case because I don't get the final review on it. I don't get the final credit for it. And that's okay. That's not why I'm there. But once I review it, then I can go out and interview witnesses again. And if they have something that's pertinent, I can bring it back to law enforcement and convince them to talk to the cops now when maybe they wouldn't 10 years ago because they were living with somebody who had a record, or they had a drug problem themselves, or, you know, you can imagine. So the dynamics change on the people, then you get better cooperation.
Are a lot of old cases actually solved in today's world, or have we got so much that we're just moving forward? And I, you know, I know in our town, I mean, cases get, there's just not enough high profile enough or enough emphasis that I know a lot of cases go unsolved.
A lot of them do go unsolved. And even now that they have cold case squads and cold case investigators that are assigned only to that, they'll go in and review what they've gotten assigned and try and pick the one that they think they have the best chance of solving. And some of them, they just, well, it will never happen. It will never happen. And, of course, you're right, the new cases are piling up on top of them all the time. So that makes it even worse. You know, I think the worst one I had, the guy literally went back into the archives, came out and blew the dust off the top of it. It had been sitting there 20 years. And he was the first officer on the scene when it happened. He was his first year in, and now he was sheriff, and he was getting ready to retire. And he handed me the box and said, "Boy, if you could fix this one," he said, "that would be, you know, that would be great for me because it's been sitting there my entire career." So, you know, they're frustrated too. They'd like to see them all solved, and they do take it personal. They don't like seeing people suffering and seeing the family suffer. But there's only so much you can do if you get a scene that's contaminated or you just don't have that much evidence to begin with.
Is there a case that stands out that that you thought maybe, gosh, I'll never find the missing piece here, and you did, and that you feel most proud about?
There's one that I do feel like I brought it to the table, nobody else did, and the guy is now put away for life, and that's probably my proudest one. I think the funniest one I ever did was they knew a guy had done it, but they couldn't get enough on him. And I went and knocked on his door, and he answered the door, and I identified myself, and the guy just burst into tears and started confessing right there. And I was like, "Whoa, whoa, wait, stop, okay, we need to do this right." And the officer that was standing there with me, he said, "How did you do that?" I said, "You know, guilt's a powerful emotion." He was sobbing in the back of the car. He said, "I've been waiting 20 years for somebody to knock on my door." And I said, "Yeah, timing was right, you know." So, took me 5 minutes. That was great.
Did you get paid for that one?
I don't get paid for any of my cold case reviews.
You
I don't think that's right to take money from people that when I do a homicide review.
Wow.
You know, it's my way of giving back. So if I take a cold case review, I do it pro bono, and I do a couple a year. And, you know, it's just my way of kind of paying back for the blessings I've got.
Wow. That's pretty awesome, Suzanne, that you could do that. But I tell you what, were you able to add an extra case that year? Because
that one was
so easy.
That one was so easy, yeah. It was like, well, okay, you know, I'm done with this one now. I can go and get another one. And the funny thing that happened was I was on the radio talking about one time, and I said, you know, if this was your daughter, you would want, you know, this to be solved, you know, step forward. And this lady called the radio station and started basically, you know, confessing to everything she knew about a homicide. And she was in tears. She actually pulled her car over the side of the road and called in to confess when she heard me on the radio. And the only problem was it wasn't my case. She was confessing to one that was totally different. So I'm taking notes. I got her off the air, talked to her for about 20 minutes, went to the police officer that had been assigned it like 6 years ago, and I said, you know, here's your case for you. And he said, "How'd you do that?" And I said, she called in, so there you go. And he had it wrapped up a week later.
That's amazing, Suzanne. You must have somebody on your side here. And when I read over the testimonials that people have said, you know, you really do a lot of good work out there. But I'm sure that it's never as easy as we all see it on TV. But
it's not easy. And you're dealing with people who are at their absolute worst. They're stressed out, they're emotional, they're upset. I mean, I've been called every name in the book. I've been threatened. I've had people beat my car with baseball bats. I mean, you name it. You know, I've had guns pulled on me. I'm dealing with some pretty scummy people on the other side of the fence. You know, not the families I'm working with, but the other side. You know, they can be pretty tough, and you just have to, you know, you have to know what you're doing and go in with a prayer, because you know, these people are, they're up against the wall, they're cornered. You know, when you come in and they know they're going to jail probably for the rest of their life, that's they have nothing to lose, so you have to be really careful.
That's right. Now, you've written several books, including The Rough Path, A Workbook for Change. Real quick, because I know we don't have much more time. What's that book about?
That book evolved out of a program I wrote for maximum security prisons that I was presenting to the inmates, and it was so well received by the corrections people and by the inmates themselves that I turned it into a reentry program called The Rough Path. And the book that you're talking about is a personal use version of that. It's for anybody who has had a traumatic incident in their lives, who basically was a victim and still is of their own making. And it's about making good choices and accountability and taking that attitude of victim out of your life once and for all and reaching your full potential and actually being happy again after going through something like that. I'm a childhood sex abuse survivor. I started my first book out talking about that, and that touched a lot of people's lives, so this is just a natural extension of that. Anyone who had childhood abuse, sex crime, violence, any sort of violent crime against them, domestic violence, that's who the book was written for. And I've had an awful lot of people come up to me and tell me that it really touched their lives, and I'm surprised by who's told me. It's been men in their 40s who never dealt with what happened to them in their childhood, and women in their 30s and 40s that have had relationships fail because of what they had happen to them when they were 10. And, you know, that's so sad that they're losing portions out of their lives they're never going to get back because of something that happened to them a long time ago. So it really is a very good, common sense, direct approach to fixing what's wrong so you can go forward and be happy.
Well, I think, you know, all of us in our lives would love to be able to have a clear conscience to be able to move forward?
Well, you know, if you're a victim, your conscience should be clear.
Yes.
And that's the first problem. You know, the first line on my website there, you know, is sometimes I think we're in a prison and the crime is how much we hate ourselves. You know, and that's really the bottom line to everything, is you're creating your own dynamic there by staying a victim and staying in the past for too long.
Wow. Well, this is some good stuff to talk about. I would love to have you back on the show. Maybe we could talk more about some of these issues.
Oh, sure. Anytime.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Listen, Suzanne, I want to thank you for your service to our country as a U.S. Air Force veteran. You certainly have taken things to a new level. You are an inspiration, and thanks so much for calling us today.
Thank you. If anybody wants to learn any more about me, they can go to my website. It's very simple, zzagency.com.
ZZ. What does that stand for?
That's actually my twins' names. I gave them a nod.
That's terrific. Thanks so much for calling us, Suzanne.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Well, there you go. That was an interesting conversation here with Suzanne McComas. And like she said, if you want to find out more, go to her website, ZZAgency.com. ZZAgency.com. Suzanne McComas right here on WCRS. We will be posting a podcast of that so you can listen to it or send it on to somebody that might appreciate it.